Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
In any generation, it can be tempting to launch a new gospel movement, especially when existing movements have become irrelevant or entrenched or perhaps even moribund. But what about the whole question of giving an old organization a fresh look and fresh leadership? And that's the question we want to discuss today. And I've got with me here today John Stevens. And John, you are the director of the Fellowship of Independent Evangelical Churches, the FIEC in the UK. You've been doing that since 2010. You've also recently planted a church in your own area. Prior to that, you were the pastor of a new church plant in the city of Birmingham in the UK, and then you've got a long background in law. You're a lecturer in law at the University of Birmingham. So we're really interested to learn from your whole experience with FIC, lessons that others could apply. So I wonder if you could just set the context for us, first of all, by explaining to us what the history of the Fellowship of Independent Evangelical Churches is.
Well, Peter, thank you very much for asking me for this interview. It's a privilege to be able to take part in that. The Fellowship of Independent Evangelical Churches was founded in 1922.
So it's quite recent.
Out of a vision to help independent churches to be able to work together and support each other. It was founded by a man called E.J. Poole Connor, who had been a deputation secretary for a mission working in the Middle East. And as he traveled around the country, he visited non-denominational churches. And he was struck by the fact that they were isolated, sometimes small, that their pastors were not particularly well trained. And so he had a vision for enabling them to work together to gain some of the benefits that denominations have, but without the power structure of a denomination. So without compromising their independence or requiring them to sort of be united on a variety of secondary issues. So the FIEC was founded by a very small group of about 18 churches on an evangelical basis of faith that honored the authority of Scripture. And the founding intention was to enable those churches to support one another. He quaintly called it a society of mutual helpfulness. And the idea was that pastors would be able to support each other and avoid isolation, that they'd be able to work together on providing adequate training for pastors, that they'd be able to support each other in church planting and new gospel initiatives, that they'd be able to provide accreditation for ministers so that they could have the same status in society as ministers in other churches, and also so they could work together on providing practical and legal advice to churches to ensure that they operated in an appropriate way within society according to the law. So the burden was lifted off the local churches. So that's where the FIEC began. And then through the sort of first 70 or so years of its history, it grew, partly as new churches recognized the value of working together and standing together.
So is that because existing churches then joined the FIEC?
It was a mix of things. Yeah. So there were some existing independent churches that saw the benefits of cooperation. Independent churches are often fearful of denominational structures and giving away their freedom. And so over time, churches that were independent came to realize that the FIEC wasn't a denomination, so perhaps more were then attracted to join. New churches were planted. And when churches were planted on new estates or in new areas and they didn't belong to a denomination, they found the FIEC was a natural home. But then particularly in the 1950s, 60s and 70s, there were a large number of independent churches that came out of other denominations or associations, like, for example, the Baptist Union or the Congregationalist Union, often as a result of doctrinal compromise within those movements. So they adopted liberal theology or they engaged in ecumenical projects. So very famously within one of those movements, a significant leader at one point denied the deity of Christ. And that led to quite a number of the churches choosing to leave because they felt they no longer wanted to identify with what they saw as a compromised group. So in that period, there were quite a number of established churches that left other groupings and joined the FIEC because they wanted to stand together on the doctrinal basis that FIEC represented.
So it started with 18 churches, and how many churches are involved now in the network?
today we're a family of about 560 mm-hmm. churches. So I became national director about 6 years ago. And over the last few years, we've had about 80 churches join us. Mm-hmm. Again, some of them established churches, some of them newly planted churches. So it's been a period of growth. But of course, over the 90 or more years of the FIEC, some churches along the way have closed, perhaps because they've become small, and new churches have joined and been started. But yes, there's been a significant growth.
But overall, that sounds like a fantastic growth story from 18 to 560 in less than 100 years. So why did the FIEC need radical change, one might ask?
Well, the radical change was really introduced or began to be thought about 8 or so years ago. Mm. And the board of the FIEC, which at that stage was a trust board of elected representatives of the churches of about 30 or 35 people, recognised that many of the churches were quite traditional. FIEC had gained a reputation for being doctrinally faithful and to stand for the orthodoxy of the gospel. But it had also perhaps kind of confused that in the past with a kind of a cultural conservatism as well. Mm. So the FIEC had not changed its fundamental convictions, but it was certainly the case that a younger generation was not identifying with the FIEC because of that sort of cultural conservatism. And the FIEC had been under-resourced. There were very few staff to serve the churches. So despite its aspirations to be a supportive sort of association that would help advance the gospel, the reality is that there was relatively little in the way of resources that were available to churches. Much of the work was carried by volunteers, many of whom were becoming a little bit more elderly. So there had been very significant achievements of the FIEC. We'd run a conference for church members that had been very successful and had had several thousand people coming to it. The FIEC had put together a training scheme that had had a number of people trained and raised up for gospel ministry through that. Mm. The FIEC had supported some church plants in some very deprived areas. So there were some real significant achievements. Mm. But I think there was a growing disconnect between those who had been involved in FIEC for the long term and a new younger generation of church leaders who shared the same theology but didn't culturally identify so much with FIEC.
Mm. So it was doctrinally sound on a good foundation, but there were issues about structure, resource, finance, training, being culturally relevant and engaged.
I think so, and I think for a younger generation of leaders, there were also other movements that had developed within the UK that were more youthful, that seemed more effective in engaging with the culture, which were probably more reflective of larger urban contemporary churches, whereas many of the FIEC churches were perhaps in smaller towns, suburban situations, and just had a more conservative feel. So to some extent, it was a recognition of a generational difficulty. Mm. And I think the danger facing independent evangelical churches in the UK was that the new generation wouldn't identify with FIEC, but would instead either start new movements or belong to other movements that were being started.
Yeah, and I guess many people would be able to identify that. So for a gospel movement facing these kind of challenges, what are the key components of I guess, structural change that you need?
Well, for the FIEC, I think there are a number of elements to the structural change that were very significant. Firstly, the decision-making system was very unwieldy. So a council of 36 people drawn from the churches was not a very effective decision-making body for strategic planning. Mm. So I think the council recognised that, and they chose to be replaced by a trust board that was down to 12 members. Okay. So they took the step of recognising that they needed a more streamlined decision-making process.
So does the council still exist and feed into that discussion, or did you...?
The council was abolished and replaced by a 12-man trust board. Okay. So effectively it became a smaller body serving the same function. But the second part of the new structure was essentially the appointment of a new full-time executive to lead the organisation. So prior to that, we had had a revolving three-year presidency in which one of the leaders of our churches would serve as president. and but that was would alongside lead the council.
Other church duties.
Yes, they would be giving a third of their time to that work.
So is your role a full-time role?
So my role is a full-time permanent role. And I think that was a recognition that unless there was sort of staff with time to be able to develop the vision, it just simply wouldn't be able to happen. And the problem with three-year presidencies is in a three-year period, a person usually spends the first year understanding what the job is, the second year they're able to do it, and the third year they're preparing to give up.
And then they're passing on to someone who has to learn the whole thing
indeed,
all over again.
Indeed. So you can't really develop long-term strategic projects particularly well. So the appointment of an executive to lead the organisation and the ministry under the authority of the Trust Board, and then the recognition that we needed a new staff team to come and help that leader to be able to deliver the vision. So as part of the planned changes, we wanted to bring in a number of members of staff to lead key areas, particularly training, mission, and pastoral care for pastors of churches. And I think that was because we recognised both that there was a need to connect with the younger generation of churches, but also there was a demand by many church leaders for far more support in their ministry. So I think the challenges of ministry were increasing. Whereas the previous generation had tended to think that if we simply stand firm for the gospel, that's faithfulness and that's what is needed. The younger generation realized that they were facing much more significant gospel challenges in a secular culture. And therefore, I think amongst the younger generation of leaders, there was a desire for much more proactive support, a desire to want to work together for the gospel, to cooperate on church planting. So they wanted a much more active partnership and cooperation between the churches to advance the gospel.
So in order to advance the gospel and perform those functions, there had to be a change of structure in governance. Council becomes Trust Board, in appointing a national director and in appointing people with specific portfolios of ministry within church as well. But what about reshaping the FIEC as a gospel movement? How did you achieve that, and what's your strategy for doing that?
Well, I think the structural element was sort of one part of enabling a gospel vision to develop, but as part of this transformation, I think there was a recognition of a need for a leadership that would be able to provide a new gospel vision for the FIEC. So in some ways, the structure was put in place, and then I was asked to come and become national director with the goal of providing visionary leadership for the churches. And I'd been a pastor of a relatively recently planted church that had grown. I'd been involved in some of the other gospel initiatives that the sort of a younger generation of churches had been involved in. I'd created sort of other initiatives that churches had been involved in. And I think the council, as part of this restructure, wanted to bring in leadership that would be able to provide that vision and a new perspective and an ability to connect with the younger generation. So they had the big vision of wanting to become a gospel movement, but they wanted to ask somebody to come and carry that vision to the churches and bring the younger generation in behind that vision.
Now, how has the oversight role changed here? Can you unpack this a bit more for us? Because you had this 30-odd person council, you've now got a much smaller Trust Board. Are they doing the same thing, or is the Trust Board performing a different role from that of the old council?
No, the Trust Board is performing a quite different role. Under the old structure, the council was a mix of governance plus also delivery. So much of the work was done by members of council and done through committees of council. The shift to the board was very much a shift to a governance model, in which the primary responsibility of the board is to oversee the governance of the FIEC as a whole, to make sure it remains compliant with its doctrines, that it fulfills its legal responsibilities, and to hold me to account in the delivery of the vision that's agreed by the FIEC. So instead of a council which exercised much of the sort of power and the activity itself, it's rather more the case that the board empowers myself as the national director and then the staff to deliver the vision of the fellowship.
So the Trust Board is now really about governance and oversight.
Yes.
But the delivery has been delegated to the national director and ministry leaders.
It has, but there's an awful lot of interaction between the board and myself. I have a very good relationship with the chair and the members of the board. So we meet at least three times a year for 24 hours. There are lots of smaller meetings and conversations outside of that. So the board is very active actively involved in scrutinizing what's happening, in helping the development of the vision. I share my ideas with the board, they refine them, we work on them. But in the end, the board gives me a considerable amount of autonomy within that framework to be able to deliver the vision of the fellowship. And what that's done is it's made our decision making more streamlined, and it's made it possible to do things more quickly and to respond to situations more rapidly. So in the past, there was a degree of institutional drag, which meant perhaps we weren't able to do things that were needed and make decisions in the best way. Whereas now there's an awful lot of ability to be able to respond rapidly to perhaps events that occur, opportunities that arise, which wasn't the case before.
So new structures, new gospel vision and focus, but what does it then mean to refresh an established movement as opposed to planting a new one altogether?
Well, I think in many ways it's about changing the culture of the organisation and then changing the perception of the organisation that within the kind of wider community and the wider Christian world. So I think one of the challenges we had within FIEC was we were well known for our doctrinal faithfulness. We were probably seen as being relatively conservative. I suspect amongst many other evangelicals, we were perceived as being the organization that would tend to say no and would be very cautious and careful. We were probably perceived as being elderly and representative of many smaller churches. Now, that wasn't completely the reality. There were lots of thriving churches within FIEC, but they didn't necessarily wear the FIEC badge particularly prominently, so they wouldn't perhaps be known as FIEC. And certainly the FIEC wasn't a culture that they identified with. So in many ways, what I had to do was, in a sense, shift the culture by enabling those churches to exercise more influence, to identify with FIEC, to help the FIEC to understand that it wasn't just smaller and more traditional churches, but there were some really thriving gospel works in surprising places. So over the last 20 years, I think quite a number of FIEC churches have been planted and started in city centres and in student communities that were raising up young leaders for the work of the gospel. And we really wanted to enabled the FIEC to understand that that was the culture of FIEC, that there was gospel dynamism. So we needed to change our internal perception of who we were, and we also then needed to communicate that to the wider community to overcome perhaps some prejudices and misunderstandings about FIEC.
Change is never easy, and I'm sure it hasn't all been plain sailing. So what are the major challenges and obstacles that an organization faces when it's contemplating major change in structure and focus like this?
Well, I was immensely privileged in that the existing council had, in a sense, already made the tough decisions of recognising that change was needed. So I didn't have to fight the battle for the necessity for change. Those who were already there had done that, and that made my position much easier. Mm-hmm. But there are inevitably always challenges when change is brought about. And I think there were a number of challenges. There are always some people who are perhaps resistant to change. They think that the organization has been successful, they're deeply committed to what it stood for, and they're fearful that change will somehow mean losing the heritage and losing the faithfulness. So when I became national director and some of these changes were implemented, there were some who thought maybe the FIEC is becoming a controlling denomination, maybe its theological integrity and commitments are going to be compromised in some way. And I think there's a real task there of reassuring people that it's building on the past and it's not overthrowing core convictions that have defined the organization for some period of time. So that's one set of challenges. I think the other set of challenges I faced was a degree of skepticism on the part of some as to whether change was possible. So again, amongst some of the younger leaders, amongst some of the larger churches that maybe had a skepticism about FIEC, in principle they were supportive of the changes, but also they were wondering, would it be possible to bring about change? So I think it was a mix of reassuring those who were fearful of change and helping those who were skeptical of change to see that we really could make a difference and we really could do things in a better way, in a way that they hadn't been accomplished in the past.
So how do you as a leader deal with the challenge of dealing with those often very godly, committed people who don't agree or accept the direction that things are moving in?
Well, I think you have to do a number of things. I think it's investing relationally in them and helping them to understand what you're doing, earning their trust over a period of time. Certainly at an initial stage, maybe asking them to exercise a measure of patience as they learn to trust you and give you an opportunity. I think leadership of any organization, you need to lead with vision. So you need to find ways in which you're constantly communicating the vision. And you need to do that in a way that fits with the history of the organization, the values of the organization, and to make very clear that those have not changed. That instead, what it's all about is about doing what the organization has always stood for, but doing it better than it's been done in the past. So it's treading a fine line between wanting to say, we are able to now do things more effectively, we're able to perhaps do more, so that there is a significant change, but that change has not compromised the fundamental values that have been at the heart of the organization and have been its vision all along. So for me, it was very helpful to do quite a lot of reading about the origins of the organization. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to communicate to those who were skeptical that actually what we were trying to fulfill was the vision that had always been mm-hmm. there, mm-hmm. but perhaps had not been able to be fulfilled in the way that was envisaged. But I spent quite a lot of time meeting individually with the leaders of our churches, both with those that I wanted to win over who were skeptical and those that I wanted to keep on board who were perhaps fearful. So in the first 6 months, the first year, I just invested an awful lot of time in meeting people, gathering groups of leaders, trying to share something of the vision, listening to them, showing that things I'd gained from them, where I'd misunderstood, where I've not known what had happened, and then showing that that was kind of informing the way that I was helping the movement to move forwards. I was also privileged to be able to recruit a staff team, and I wanted to recruit people who would have the confidence of the sort of churches as a whole. So when I became national director, there had been a general secretary, and he continued to work as our new pastoral ministries director. It was hugely helpful to have somebody who was already well established with the churches and trusted by them, and the fact that he was working with me meant that there was a really significant continuity. I was able to recruit, first of all, two other members of staff to come and work as training director and mission director. And one had been very much involved in FIEC. He'd been a past president of it. So again, he was part of the history. And then one was a very well-respected pastor of a larger church who was respected by the leaders of many of the younger churches. So I was able to put together a team that represented all of the different sections of the organization, the different groups of churches. But we were all committed to the same vision and stood together. Mm. And that helped us really to bring about the cultural transformation and to carry as many of the churches with us as we could. Mm. It would be fair to say there were some churches that left. So there were a small number of churches, often smaller and more conservative churches, who, as they saw the unfolding vision to be a gospel movement, felt they didn't want to be part of FIEC anymore. For some of them, they were fearful that it was becoming more denominational and they prided their independence. I think for some, they had relied on FIEC to, in a sense, underwrite their conservative position. And so their reason for belonging to FIEC was that they sort of were grateful that there was an organization that were, in effect, confirming the rightness of their stand. Some of them find it more difficult when they discovered that there was a greater breadth of ministry style within FIEC, and that it was no longer affirming their style as the right style. And so at that point, they felt that they didn't want to be part of the fellowship anymore.
How's this whole process been for you personally? Because you've come to this role with a lot of experience and relevant skills, and yet you've had to lead an organization through significant change. What new ministry lessons of leadership have you had to pick up over the last few years that others might benefit from?
Well, I think the first thing to say, it was an absolute thrill for me to be given the opportunity to lead the FIEC. I'm a committed, independent evangelical church leader, and I believe that that is the biblical ecclesiology, that the biblical pattern is that churches are independent and they should be led by their own kind of elderships. But yet it's a biblical principle that local churches should work together for the bigger cause of the gospel. So for me, it was an opportunity to try to bring about something that I thought was needed and something that I thought was biblical. So it was a thrilling opportunity. So at one level, I came into revitalizing the FIEC, committed to the vision of FIEC, and I think that's absolutely essential. Mm. I wasn't trying to rescue an organization that I didn't believe in. Mm. I had a strong and clear vision for the role that FIEC should play.
So people saw you as one
play.
Of them sharing their values and coming out of the movement.
Absolutely, and I think in the UK at the moment, something like 97% of people are not born-again evangelical believers. There's a massive missional task. Mm. So the need to work together as a gospel movement that is seeking to proclaim Christ to the nation was just something that I was absolutely committed to. Having said that, my experience had been as a church pastor, although I did find that my leadership within universities actually was helpful. Mm. So I had been deputy head of the law faculty at the University of Birmingham, which was a 1,000-student faculty. So I'd had to do some things in terms of charity compliance, budgeting, working with staff in my university context at a higher level than my church. Mm. And actually moving to an organization, in God's providence, that experience, which I hadn't really understood at the time, was actually hugely helpful to give me some of the skills that I needed. But I think for me, one of the big challenges was moving from having led a church where I'd been the church planter. And when you plant a church, you're able to gather around you from the beginning people who are committed to you and committed to the vision, and you're able to build from the ground up. It was a very different challenge coming into an established situation and having to win people over. So for me, that took a period of time, I think, to work out how to lead when you're working with an established organization, and you can't simply recreate it from the ground up in the way that you would want, but you have to incrementally change it. And as you do that, you also learn that some of the things you think you should have done probably aren't the best thing to have done. So I've needed to skill up in leadership. I've had a larger staff team that I'm working for. One of the aspects of our work is that we have a team of solicitors, a team of lawyers who work providing legal services to churches. That's an entirely new challenge for me. Again, in God's providence, having been a lawyer, I did at least have some understanding of how that works. But when I became a Christian and sort of felt called into ministry rather than law, I never thought I'd end up having to be involved in sort of the management of a law firm. But that was an area where I really needed to skill up.
Are there any things that you would have done differently looking back?
Yes, I think at the early stages, having come in from a particular perspective, I think I probably wasn't as sensitive to the faithfulness of those of a previous generation who'd taken a stand in very different circumstances. And I think that's always the danger of young leaders. You don't understand why an older generation took the stand that it did and how shaped they were in those circumstances. I think I've learnt to be more grateful for the gospel faithfulness that they demonstrated at a very difficult time. They were willing to stand firm for the gospel at a time of great cost. I think for a generation of leaders, many of whom left their denominations over theological compromise, I hadn't realized the personal cost of losing churches, losing home, losing income, losing social respectability. And it was easy to perhaps see them as being stuck in a cultural tradition and not to have realized the very significant gospel stand that they had taken at a particular time.
And what was the key to getting these folk on, these faithful folk on board?
I think in the end, I think there's been a wider change in the culture in Christianity more generally. So the British church has been changing. So I think an older generation of evangelicals were used to church being done in a very particular way. So issues of dress, of style, the style of music, and just more generally, many of those issues that were significant arguments 20 years ago, now the whole culture has changed. So some who come from a more conservative background, as their own children and their grandchildren have changed, they themselves have changed and have seen that many of those things are not the core of the gospel and they're not the core of faithfulness. So I've been helped by the way that the older generation has also embraced change. But mostly it's been by building personal relationships, reassuring, mutual understanding. Actually, when people have a gospel heart, if they see that the result of change is the gospel is advancing, if they see new churches being planted, and we, over the last 5 years, we've been involved in about 57 church plants through the FIEC. If they see a younger generation of gifted ministers coming through, and one of the most important things we've done, I think, is to begin to raise up a new generation of leaders who we've identified and helped support going to Bible college. Gospel-minded people, even though they might be more conservative, will rejoice when they see gospel progress, particularly against a background of more general church decline. So actually small steps of success where they've seen that the change has led to gospel benefit has encouraged people to be more positive. Our major event within the FIEC, which we founded as a result of these changes, was a leaders' conference. So we have 500 or 600 leaders from our churches coming together for 2 or 3 days. And that's an opportunity to explain the vision, to share stories, to meet one another. And that's been hugely helpful in developing the culture. And leaders who might have been a bit skeptical, we've encouraged them to come to that conference. And as they've come year by year and seen what's going on and they've heard how God is at work, they've actually been won over by the vision. And I think also the perception of FIEC more widely within the evangelical Christian community has changed. So we've worked very hard to partner with other evangelical groupings that would share our convictions. And I think the result of that is we've come to be more widely respected by other groups. And again, for some of the older generation who might have felt slightly isolated, they can see that the way that FIEC is being perceived and is playing a greater part in the national Christian scene. And that's been hugely encouraging to them. So I think with any change of movement, it's really helpful to try to have some evident steps of success at a relatively early stage. You might have long-term goals that will take a long time to accomplish, but in order to help people to accept and support change, it can be really helpful to have some progress that is made relatively quickly that shows the benefit of the change that's been brought in. So there were a number of projects we pursued that just showed very rapid benefit and helped people to understand the progress that could be made.
And many people watching this video will be in the situation of having to lead through a period of change, perhaps in their churches, perhaps in parachurch organizations, maybe in church movements like your own. Finally, what advice would you have for someone in that position, John, based on your own experience and the things you've learned?
I think pray a lot as you lead through that situation. I think your own personal integrity and spiritual life as a leader is absolutely vital. You have to lead out of your relationship with God. I've always felt that as a leader, the absolute foundation of my leadership is daily time with God, reading the Bible and praying. And whatever the organizational demands and pressures might be, that must not be compromised, or else otherwise your character will suffer, your integrity will suffer. So I think a vibrant personal spiritual life is a prerequisite to leading through change. I think before God, you have to have a clear sense of vision and direction and where you're wanting to get to. So if you don't know where you're going, it will be very difficult to lead other people there. And you've got to have conviction that before God, that is the right place to be going. And it will genuinely serve the gospel. You have to work very hard to repent and try to avoid having desires just to simply build the organization for its own sake. So having a clear vision that is genuinely driven by the gospel. And then I think it's about immense wisdom in terms of thinking through how that vision is to be realized. It's knowing what the steps are to get to that vision. So it's all very well having a big vision, but actually in order to get to a big vision, often there are a multiplicity of small steps that need to be made. And it requires immense wisdom to know where to start, to sort of differentiate between what can be done and what you'd like to see done. So having a sort of a clear sense of where to begin, what initial steps to take, a flexibility, a wise flexibility that enables you to change as events or your knowledge. It's not simply following a roadmap that you push through. You may know where you want to get to, but as you travel that journey, there'll be side turns that you need to take, course corrections that you need to make, better routes that you can take. I think the ability to change the way of getting there in order to reach the goal is an important aspect. But you have to win over your staff who are working with you and keep investing in them, keep valuing them, keep encouraging them, keep helping them to understand the vision and where you're trying to get to. And then exercising huge amounts of patience with those who are perhaps skeptical or fearful, not wanting to alienate them, but wanting as far as you possibly can to take them with you. Not seeing them as the enemy if they're slightly resistant to change, not seeing them as a problem, but recognizing their vital importance to the achievement of the long-term the long-term goal. I think it's a wise saying that it's always the case that you overestimate what you can accomplish in a year and you underestimate what you can accomplish in 5 years. So leadership and change is a gradual process of keeping heading in the same direction. And you have to avoid not becoming frustrated because you don't achieve everything as quickly as you want. But then as change begins to take hold, things move more quickly. And at that point, you can forget how much change there has been. Mm. So I think it helps you as a leader to keep taking stock, reflecting on what God has done, reflecting on all that's been achieved, making sure that you're always rejoicing over every achievement and every step forwards. Mm. And then keeping your eyes on the goal of where you're wanting to go.
John, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.